These are the people at the heart of racing. Their lives, their stories, in their own words.
Yeah, racing. I mean, that's where it started, Michael. That's really the beginning. That's where it burned as a kid.
We'll talk about the champion, Black Caviar.
Black Caviar was a freak. So was the trainer.
No, the first Melbourne Cup I was involved with was a horse called Gutum Gutum.
Gutum Gutum.
I was listening to her at RSN interview with John Hawkes, and he said, I think it's a really average guineas this year.
This is a very sad story, but making sure that, you know, that his head was upright.
See TJ Smith or Bart Cummings in the background, and you're just in awe.
I follow a lot of sports, but the sport I follow most closely will be horse racing.
For the next hour, RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents Racing's Open Mic.
Yes, welcome to Racing's Open Mic. Each week we delve into the lives and times of someone who is involved in racing or has a great love and passion for racing. And this morning we have someone who you could describe as the Winx of Melbourne radio. He is unbeatable. Yeah. Ross Stevenson, great to have you in the studio. How are you?
Hey, nice to see you. It's very nice to be here. I've heard a lot of stories have emanated from these studios, and you asked me whether I'd ever been here before, and I don't think I have. But one of my favourite stories, Ian Clearland, I'm pretty sure he used to do Drive on this radio station, and one day he was running a bit late, and he's coming up in the lift, and the news is just finishing out, the 4 o'clock bulletin's just finishing, and he rushes into the studio, and he sits down, and he looks up, and he goes, it's 7 minutes past four. And my name's Ian Clearland, welcome to Drive. And he looks across and there's a bloke sitting in the chair. And he says, and my first guest today is, what's your name, son? And he says, John Walker. And what do you do? And he goes, I'm a runner. He goes, you any good? He says, well, I'm the current Olympic gold medalist and world record holder.
Well, you...
I think that was here in this building.
Well, you are the king of breakfast radio in Melbourne, 3AW, with John Burns. Have you ever slept through the alarm?
Yes. Yeah, I have. I, in fact, missed an entire program one day when I was on with Dean Banks. I may have just got a bit confused late at night and forgotten that I had to work the next day, and I missed the whole thing. But it had a silver lining, because... we were supposed to pre-record an interview that day with Julio Iglesias, and Dean said, well, since you've slept in and I had to do it all on my own, you can stay around and do the pre-record with Julio, which I did. Every year since then, I've got a Christmas card from Julio Iglesias.
Have you really?
Yeah. I imagine I'm a select group of about 150,000, but every year one's arrived, regular as clockwork.
What did you do? What was your reaction when you picked up your phone that morning?
Just pure panic. But it's that's the only time I've missed an entire program. I've missed parts of them.
You have something in common with a lot of people who listen to this program, because pretty much all the trainers and jockeys who work in the industry listen to the RSN program.
Yeah.
And you're up the same time as they are.
Yeah, and indeed. And I know a few of them, when they're not listening to the RSN program, are listening to ours out there in the clocker's box out at Flemington. At least they tell me. They tell that to everyone, no
doubt.
What
time do you rise?
Oh, it's not too bad. 4 o'clock, which I always say 4 o'clock's early in the morning. I think Alan Jones in Sydney gets up at 2:30. That's the middle of the night.
Gee.
So I think there's a difference between the middle of the night and early in the morning. So it's not too bad. I don't mind it.
You're the king of media, and I'm going to enjoy going through your career a little later. But where did your passion and your love of racing come from?
It came from my mother, and I've discovered since doing That's Racing that a lot of people's passion for racing has come because their mothers were interested in it. Hamish, for example, Hamish's mum was passionate about horse racing. Mum worked at the TAB in Church Street, Hawthorne, and a sign of the times, I think it's now a Japanese restaurant. a bit like I couldn't get over one day, I lived in Fitzroy for 20 years, when I went down to the TAB in Brunswick Street and discovered it was a vegetarian restaurant. I said, now, isn't that a sign of the times? and it was called the Hawthorne TAB. And a person of your tender years won't remember, and it'll be beggar your belief, that you could only collect a winning ticket from the place you bought it from. And they were all handwritten tickets, and on the back of the ticket was stamped the name of the agency. In this case, just said Hawthorne. So someone had the job of stamping the back of every ticket before it was written out with Hawthorne, just stamped in ink. That was me. That was my job. I got that job when I was about 11. Mum got me that job. I think I was paid $3 for Saturday morning's work. So based on the fact that I worked in the TAB for about 2 years getting paid $3 a day, which introduced me to punting, How much do you reckon that's cost?
Yeah, the ledger doesn't add up.
Oh, the ledger would be.
A little bit of a different time, social conscious as well. You got 11-year-old just stamping the tab tickets back in the day.
Yeah, someone would have rung up Neil Mitchell these days, wouldn't it? And, you know, had the boss of Tabcorp sacked.
Did your mum like a bet then? Did your dad like a bet?
Dad had no interest whatsoever. And mum only a daily double, 3-1. And that was her interest in it. But she loved it and she still loves it. I've got a few horses. So she follows them as well.
That young introduction to the tab, you would have got to witness some interesting characters at a young age, the characters of the TAB.
Well, once again, this will probably cause your head to fall off, but you were not allowed to loiter in a TAB. You were allowed to come in, place your bet, and then you had to leave. If you weren't allowed to hang around, you weren't allowed to listen to the races, for example, you had to come
in. Did they have the races on the radio?
Nope.
No.
It's just incredible to think of it now. So you had to say to people occasionally, excuse me, sir, you have to leave. Because you had to come in, transact your business and go.
And 11-year-old Ross was saying that?
No. I then went on when I was at university for the entire time I was there, just up the road here. I worked in the tab selling tickets, at which stage they were computer generated. And I did remember one day a couple came in, this old bedraggled couple, typical Aussie couple, and he would have weighed 7 stone, and he had nicotine. I think you were allowed to smoke. And she put her bet on, and then she addressed him in order to say it was time to leave the TAB. She said, come on, Tiger. And I looked at him, and I've never seen a human being look less than a tiger. There's a tiger than this poor old bloke. Yeah, it was. It was a bit like when I started as a lawyer. Lawyers weren't allowed to advertise. Mm. Well, look at it now. Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing that the change. It was very puritanical attitude to gambling.
Now, were you born in? Are you a Queenslander?
Yeah, yeah, born in Queensland.
So, what age did you and your family move down here?
I was young. I was about 8. I had the very good fortune to go to Glenferrie State School, Glenferrie Primary, I think it is now, which is I'm the only member of the family who barracks for Hawthorn.
Who do the others barrack for?
Melbourne, the Demons.
So recent times have been good to you?
They have been good. Not so kind to the rest of the family, but I was hoping the Demons could make the finals this year, but my father always used to say to me, come and barrack for the Demons, son. They're a better class of boy.
Well, your father had a media background, didn't he?
Well, he worked. He was a proofreader at the Age, which meant that he was effectively a night shift worker. So, he wasn't home. He was working when, I got home from school. He was at work.
So you go to uni, you work in a tab. Do you like a punt at the same time?
Yep. I assume. Well, I think I was about 15 at school when I ran a book on Piping Lane's Melbourne Cup, 72. Mm-hmm. Does that sound about right? Mm-hmm. And I instructed my penciler, who was a mate. I said, "Now listen, we're running a book on the cup here. We're taking bets on every horse except Piping Lane." So that was a
good year.
It was a risky manoeuvre. I think it was 40-1 Piping Lane. Yeah, so that was a good result. I liked Piping Lane for some reason. I don't know why. I can't remember why.
And this school that you went to, was it Trinity?
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, is it true that you sang in the choir? You were a choir boy.
Well, that's the only reason I got to go to Trinity was that I got a scholarship singing at St Paul's Cathedral Choir. So, and I still think that's the case, that choir boys at St Paul's are given a scholarship to go to Trinity. So that was 6 days a week singing in church. So it was a tough caper. There was no going home after school to kick the footy in the street and, have an iced Vovo and a glass of milk. We were straight into town at St Paul's to practice and then sing at the evening service.
So have you still got a good voice?
I like to think I have. You're not going to get me to sing, by the way. I'd like to think I have.
So you are a choir boy, and that's the reason you get your scholarship to Trinity College.
Trinity Grammar.
Trinity Grammar. When did you think that you were going to become a lawyer then?
Well, it really wasn't my decision. My father had very strong views. There's three of us, and he said, you're going to be a doctor, you're going to be a lawyer, and you're going to be a nurse. And that's how it turned out. So, it, you know, I took instruction well. He just sort of wrote us and instructed us what we were going to do, and somehow we ended up all doing it.
Now, the legal fraternity is also a fraternity that has quite a few people who enjoy racing.
Oh, yeah.
And racing horses. Did you find that when you first became a lawyer?
Loads. There are just so many of them. There was a famous, there was a judge whose two sons are now judges, who are a great horse racing family. And I remember them telling me the story that Bert Bryant, who graced these studios, that they had a horse called Boat, B-O-A-T, and they went to Bert after the races one day and they said, Bert, we own this horse and we can't help noticing that you're mispronouncing its name. You're calling it Boat. It's actually pronounced Boat. It's an Indonesian word meaning seafaring vessel. Thereafter, Bert always called it Boat.
Have you had any luck in the horse stakes as an owner?
I've had one good one, a horse called Air Hostess.
Yes.
That I owned with...
Dr. Turf involved
with
that?
Yeah, Dr. Turf, Trevor Marmalade, and I. She won her first three in town, and her third start, she won the Talent Dirt Stakes. She was only little, but she had a great motor. She was a beautiful horse. Then, of course, she... You know, if you had a bad horse, you could toss it off the top of Nauru House and it'd just dust itself off, it'd be fine. But because she was talented, she broke down. However, I've recently bought her granddaughter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So who trains her?
Robbie Griffiths.
Yep.
She's just been named. She's called Perfect Party. Because I was very fond of Air Hostess, and one of the fellow owners rang me up a few months back and said, I've just been looking at online, and here's Air Hostess's granddaughter. Air Hostess, Perfect Hostess, and now Perfect Party. So, I've never met Robbie Griffiths, but he's going pretty well at the moment.
He's flying, and he's a lovely bloke. What type of owner are you?
Regarded as money that has been flushed down the toilet already. Totally hands-off. They know what they're doing, and patience is everything.
Do you like to cop a tip? Do you want to find out when your horse is running? Are you one of those that will ask the trainer, is this going to win? Should I have a bet today?
No, never. However, I sent a racehorse, a leading trainer. A year or so back, I recommended Narcos to him on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And he rang me up and he said, oh, mate, he said, you're a good judge. Let me know if there's anything else. So I sent him a text on Friday Ozark. Get on Ozark. Has anyone here seen
Ozark? I've seen it. Very good. And it was my wife who said, Ross said, we need to watch this.
So I tipped him into Ozark. So he said, thanks for that. I'll start watching it. By the way, this horse of mine racing on Saturday, she's very, very special. Right. So they'll thank you. So I took that horse in a double with a horse I liked. The horse I liked was Stampede in the last. I thought it was a good thing. Stampede won. His horse ran nowhere.
Yep. I texted you last week and said you were coming on. Who do you think will win? And you just replied back two words, Russian Revolution. Mm. What happened in the interim?
Well, I should have had Russian Revolution. Well, I backed Russian Revolution. Yeah. But if I'd backed my own judgment, rather than listening to a trainer, I would have had Russian Revolution into Stampede.
Exactly.
It's to great effect.
What does this horse mean to you? A horse named after one of the most famous segments on your show.
It's Hunter Jack at the 250 in front. Shalmaneser, Eshiel's trying hard. The Room of Farland, Leopari the outsider, is starting to wind up now. Hunter Jack still in front from the Room of Fowl. Shalmaneser, Hunter Jack in front from the Room of Fowl. Hunter Jack's clinging on from the Room of Fowl. They hit it. I think Hunter Jack from the Room of Fowl, but they're wide apart. Shalmaneser between them third.
It's the only time he's won and the caller got it wrong. So we have no trophy moment. Hunter Jack didn't win. The Room of Fire won at $71.
And you backed him, of course.
I backed him, yes. We all backed him. Well, except one owner didn't back him. He's a funny old horse. He's in Brisbane now.
I've got an SMS off a listener, Rusty, saying, Ross, I've noticed the Room of Fire's running in Brisbane. Do you still own it? And please tell me you had a heap on it when it won at 100-1.
We did back it. One of my co-owners had a lot on it. But we had a nice win when it won it. Well, that owner got 100, so I got $71. Yep, we still own it. Chris Waller's shifted it to Brisbane, desperately trying to get a win for us. It ran third at its last start. It was probably a little unlucky. But I, to be perfectly honest with you, I've, you know, what's that famous song? The thriller's gone. The bloom is off the rose with my relationship with the Rumorfile. I'd like it to get one more win at Doomben or Eagle Farm, and then we can move it on. I'd be more than happy to.
So who do you, or how do you pick your trainers? Is it just the ownership group you go in, or?
Yeah, I've got a group of about three or four of us. It was a mate of mine, Rowan. I've always wanted to, this is years ago, always wanted to have a horse trained by Chris Waller. Mm. This is before he really made it. I said, I like this bloke. So we've got three horses now with Chris, and we've become sort of friends with him. I went to the Kentucky Derby. Group of five of us went, including Chris, went to the Kentucky Derby in May of this year.
Tell me about that. What was that experience like? Because I believe when... Were you involved with Chris when he got to meet Bob Baffert and Arrogate?
And American Pharaoh.
American Pharaoh, yeah.
I wasn't there then because I had to work, but I then met Bob Baffert at the races and at Churchill Downs. So I met Bob, and Bob and Chris was there. Manchester United manager, what's his name? The famous one, Alex Ferguson.
Alex Ferguson.
He was there, and Chris was. And he'd heard about Chris. He heard about Winx, yeah. So they were chatting about Winx and about horse racing. So he owned a good one, didn't he, Sir Alex Ferguson?
Rock of Gibraltar?
Rock of Gibraltar. Yeah. That's it. Yep. It's fantastic. I would say make sure you get good tickets if you go. It's smaller than the Valley. It's a dirt track. It's more elongated. It's more of an oval. So, you're flat out down the straight, but the corners are tight. So get yourself good tickets. But it's a fabulous event. It was freezing. I went to the Oaks on Friday. Bob Baffert trained the winner of the Oaks. We went there. He had one runner, and it was called Abel Tasman. And we said, you're kidding, aren't you? And $9.
$9.
Saluted. And then it was the coldest Kentucky Oaks since 1940. They got a little over 100,000, and then the Kentucky Derby's the following day, the Saturday, and it was very cold, but they got 150,000. Usually they get about 175,000. But if you're a racing person, it's an absolute must.
Did you have a mint julep?
Yes. I wanted the full experience. When they come out before the Derby itself, the crowd sings My Old Kentucky Home. So I wanted that full experience. I got myself a mint julep. I was standing there with Chris Waller and a few other mates, and I drank a mint julep singing My Old Kentucky Home. I wanted that full Kentucky Derby experience.
Now, That's Racing is back last week, and I did see that Hamish said that you were on the verge of having the best punting day of your life. Only needed one horse to run a place.
Yeah, it was a horse called Thunder Snow, which is by a Helmet, because I backed it because of the Australian connection. It did apparently what Helmet did, was famous for in the Kentucky Derby. Jumped out of the barriers and then just stood there buck jumping. Took no part. Have you seen the footage?
I have.
It's incredible. Took no part in the race. Just wouldn't run.
And you only needed it to run a place.
Yeah, well, that's racing, isn't it?
That's racing. Ross Stevens is a special in-studio guest for Racing's Open Mic. Plenty to talk about with Ross after this, including how he got into radio, made the transition from a lawyer to Radio King. 3W's Ross Stevenson is our special guest on Racing's Open Mic. Ross, how long have you been number one now in the ratings?
I've got to try and give some clever answer here. Like, I once asked John Laws on air how much he earned, and he said, "I never discuss money with friends." Oh, it's been a while, I think.
Well, you started at AW, was it 1990?
Yeah.
There wouldn't be many surveys that you haven't been number one since then, are there?
Oh, it took us a couple of years, I think, to get to number one. Towards the end of 1991, I think, was the first time we got to number one. Yeah, it's been good.
Do you get nervous nowadays, or is it it's just another day?
No, I don't get nervous. I get nervous public speaking. I don't know what you're like with public speaking, but I find it particularly daunting. But not being on the wireless.
Is it because you like the anonymity of being behind the radio mic?
Yeah.
People don't see your face.
You don't see the people you're talking to other than you. But when you get up there, and you know, there's the crowd, and there's the expectation. I find it very nerve-wracking. I don't enjoy it at all.
Have you always had that? Because being a lawyer, you've got to stand up and speak in a public domain.
Yeah. I was a bit tougher as a lawyer than I am now. I look back on myself when I was a lawyer, having to negotiate, and I was pretty tough and I was pretty good. I couldn't possibly do it now. It's all gone. It's all gone.
Is it true that back in your lawyer days, you had a young Julia Gillard in your firm and you said one day you're going to be the Prime Minister?
I did. I said that to her on any number of occasions.
Really?
I said, you'll be Prime Minister one day. And we interviewed her one day, I think, when she was acting Prime Minister. I think when she was deputy to Kevin Rudd and he was out of the country. Surprise, surprise. And I got her on. I said, Julia, you know why you're on today, don't you? And she said, yes, Ross, you told me one day I'd be Prime Minister. So I did, yeah.
What was it about her back then that...
Oh, yeah. She's very clever. She's very smart. And I knew she was a party political person. And there weren't many of those around. I mean, how many people do you know who have an interest in party politics? Mm. I don't know any, but she had an interest in party politics, and I thought, oh yeah, you know, I sort of half believed it when I told her.
So when you were a lawyer,
what I've got?
Oh well, now there's the old
frame of mind. You couldn't walk down to the TAB in those days and say, I want to have a bet that Julia Gillard would be Prime Minister, but you could ring up a bookmaker now and get on.
You could. You could have a bet about your young son or daughter becoming anything.
Yeah.
When you were a lawyer, what was your specialty?
I was an ambulance chaser. Yeah, you know, personal injuries. That was my go. You know, trying to convince the jury that the person with an ingrown toenail was incapable of working for the rest of their lives. Yeah, that was it for me.
Well, so you weren't defending criminals. You were trying to find people money.
Yeah, I've often said I've probably the only person who's been able to improve their social standing by joining the media.
Well, that's correct. And why and how did you make the change? You started off at Triple R, is that right? 3RRR?
Yeah, 3RRR for 4 years, and then 1 year for 3AK when Alan Bond owned it. And then along came Steve Price and offered us a job at... And AW and been there ever since. So the hard part was going back to my father and telling him that I wasn't going to be a lawyer anymore, that I was going to be on the radio. So, but he took it all right.
So when you're a lawyer, and it was community radio, and it was the famous name, Lawyers, Guns and Money, and, gee, your stablemates, what a famous era that was for 3RRR.
It was a pretty amazing package when you think about it. I can't remember. I seriously cannot remember the order they went in, but it was Cuddabeans, Punter to Punter, Lawyers, Guns and Money, and then Film Buffs Forecast. And I'm quite honest in saying that I think clearly the best of them. Tony Ledden and Covey are mates of mine. That was a great show, the Cuddabeans. But Punter to Punter, to me, is the best radio program I've ever heard. Mm. It was. I still remember the first time I heard it. I was playing footy and we had a team meeting before a final on a Saturday morning and we were waiting for the stragglers to turn up and someone said, have you heard this show, Punter to Punter? And they put it on, we're sitting around waiting and they opened up with, it's a Saturday morning, it's 22 degrees, there's not a cloud in the sky, what an absolutely perfect day for racing. And I thought, good Lord, what's this? It was superb.
Mm.
Slim,
do
you remember it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Slim Whittle, Con Marasco, Dr. Turf, Trevor Marmalade, Tammy Whittle. It's such great moments. Great radio.
And such great comedy. And I suppose...
A lot of work.
Absolutely. Preparation.
Preparation was enormous.
But what drew you to radio? What drew you there from being a lawyer to wanting to try this medium?
I reckon at any given stage, 50% of lawyers don't want to be lawyers. I got mates who've spent their entire lives being lawyers who absolutely love it. I mean, I've got two mates who are judges, and I always say to people, you hang around long enough, some of your friends will end up with responsible jobs. they absolutely love it, but I didn't love it. Mm. I didn't have any great love for it. So when an easier option came along, naturally, I grabbed it, and I hope my children aren't listening.
Who are some of the most favourite people that you've interviewed? You've interviewed hundreds of thousands of people over the years. Does there anyone stick out?
I remember interviewing Michael Caine,
mm.
and I'd written a couple of plays with John Clark, my late great mate, and we'd written a play called The Royal Commission into the Australian Economy, and it was a Royal Commission, and the Royal Commissioner in the play was Malcolm Turnbull, and because he was a feisty young lawyer at the time, and we had him played by a great actor called Frank Gallagher. Frank was Scottish, but he could go between his Scottish brogue and just sound as Aussie as all get out. And I was having a drink with Frank one night after one performance, and Michael Caine's name came up. And he said, yeah, no, I've worked Michael Caine out. And I said, what do you mean? He said, doesn't matter what length of any bit of dialogue he's given, he'll break it up into three. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, there's a movie called Get Carter, where he's released from jail and he has to go and report to his parole officer. And he knocks on the door and the parole officer opens the door and the woman says, may I help you? And Michael Caine says, they told me you'd give me a job. and then he said, there's another movie where he's got a much longer line where this bloke's giving him trouble and he says, you're a very big man in very bad shape. Now do yourself a favour and sit down. So I interviewed Michael Caine and I told him the story. And I said, I've got a mate who says he's worked you out. And I explained. Years later, on a Saturday night, I'm sitting at home watching Michael Parkinson, and I'm alone, and his guest is Michael Caine. And Parkinson says, what do you put your success down to? And he said, someone told me I always break up dialogue into three parts. And I'm at home going, that was me. And a few years ago, Burnzo and I were flying to America, I think, to do a broadcast. And we're both watching the same movie, and it was Batman, where Michael Caine was playing Alfred. So Burns and I both like a drink, and we're sitting there with a glass of wine, and we're like, you know, two old people watching the movies together. And it's Batman, and I think it's Christian Bale is Batman, and he's knocked unconscious somehow, I don't know. Anyway, he's in bed, and he wakes up, he looks up, and there's Alfred standing over him. And Christian Bale says, How long have I been out? And Alfred says, 3 days, it's your birthday, many happy returns. We've just looked at each other and gone, he's done it again. We've got a collection now at AW. So much of his dialogue is broken up into three.
That is brilliant. And that's what I think people love about your program. It's entertaining little facts like that as well. The rumour file, we've spoken about the horse, but where did that segment come from?
I used to, as I told you, I lived in Fitzroy for 20 years, and I was single, and I used to, every afternoon about 5 o'clock, I used to go to the Standard Hotel in Fitzroy Street, Fitzroy. We used to call it the Subby, the Substandard. It's a great pub. I love it. No, I haven't been for years, but I think it's still a great pub. It was sort of my lounge room. I'd go there and order a beer, and I would notice that people would come in after work. Didn't matter what they did for a living. Right? There'd be builders and public servants and rock stars and you'd sit there and people would go, someone told me that, and I thought this is what we all spend our time doing, is just telling people what they've heard. So I went to Steve Price and I said, I've got this idea for a thing called the Rumour File, right? Where people ring up and they tell us what they've heard, you know, scuttlebutt. And he said it'll cost us. That'd be ridiculous. We'd be sued out of existence, right? There'd be so many defamation proceedings against us. All right, fair enough. June of that was early in the year. June of that year, can I say it was 91, I went to the United States on my own just for a couple of weeks. Came back, said to Steve Price, I listened to a bit of radio in America. He said, what'd you hear? I said, I heard this thing called the Rumour File, which was absolute rubbish. I hadn't heard at all. He said, where people ring up and tell what they've heard. And he goes, that's the greatest idea I've ever heard. So that was the birth of the Rumour File. Make sure you never say it's your own idea. All right, here at RSN, if you've got a great idea, say you've heard it somewhere else.
See, that's the experience of the lawyer coming through, isn't it?
Yeah,
your argument.
Got to package it the right way.
One of the things which I love on That's Racing, which you do with Hamish McLaughlin, which is a cracking show on racing.com, is your love letter to racing. Where did that idea come from?
Years ago, I'm going to say about 3 or 4 years ago, I was asked to propose the toast at the Norm Smith Oration at the MCG. David Parkin gave the oration and I had to propose a toast, and I was just mucking around trying to think what I was going to do, and I thought, I'll just sort of write about what I love. Footy. I'll write what I love about footy. So I wrote a love letter to footy. And Gil McLaughlin heard about it, and at the following season he asked me to read my love letter to footy at the opening of the season in Adelaide. And the last 2 years I've had held a charity event called Love Letter to Footy.
It's coming up. The racing one's coming up.
Yeah, yeah, then the VRC came along and we had a chat, and they said, why don't you do a love letter to racing? So we're going to do that on Turnbull Stakes Day. Just Google Love Letter to Racing Flemington. Tony Leonard, Andrew Rule, Simon O'Donnell, myself, Amanda Elliott.
Oh,
we're going to
read
a love letter to racing. So it was that it started with footy, and then now it's moved into racing.
Have you got any favourite love letter lines from racing?
Trying to think. There's an extremely... When Hamish broke his ribs, I told him a rude one just to make him laugh. I do remember when I was in Fitzroy, there were two TABs. There was the one that became a vegetarian restaurant, and there was the one that's also now no longer there. It was full of the biggest bunch of weirdos. And we used to go there. James Button actually wrote an article about this TAB for the Sunday Age. We used to call it the Star Wars Bar because it was full of space cadets. It was so unusual. Anyway, one day, one of the regulars of that TAB bowled through the door, walked through to discover that the TAB was being held up. It was armed robbery. So he walks in. And he asked the armed robbery, said, can I lie on the floor like everyone else? So that was the sort of customer they used to get there. I always said if there was an Olympic event, because remember you weren't allowed to smoke in TABs, but if there was an Olympic event whereby you could stand in the doorway of the TAB and lean backwards and smoke so that technically you lean back at a 45 degree angle, so technically you're not smoking in the TAB. Australia would win gold every time.
There's actually a Twitter account which has people of the TABs. If you follow that, it is quite
please.
Outstanding.
Oh,
with photos
please.
Of people in TABs around Australia.
Oh, yeah. Can you send me that?
Definitely will. Ross Stevens is our special studio guest on Racing's Open Mic. After this, we're going to have a chat about who he thinks are the best horses, best trainers, best jockeys, best punting story he's got involved in racing. You're listening to Racing's Open Mic for Carbine Chemicals. If you've got a two-year-old heading into work, give them the best start with Carbaline or Volganic. Carbine Chemicals, feed to succeed.
This is RSN 927's Racing Pulse and Open Mic.
3W's is Ross Stevenson. A self-confessed racing tragic is our special guest today. We've got some SMSs coming through here, Ross. Can you ask him about Punt Struck?
Yeah, that was a television show that a mate of mine, Mick Bartholomew, and I did many years ago on Channel 31. Sort of precursor to That's Racing, if you like, but I couldn't even hazard a guess as to when that is. That would be in the 1990s sometime.
Another SMS is coming through here saying that they remember you from an old show, Donoghue and Stevenson, and they want to know why did you have to not use your, or why didn't you use your real surnames?
Because, I mean, just like in, as I was explaining earlier, that in TABs you weren't allowed to loiter. Can you compare and contrast with the modern? It was considered very bad form if you were a lawyer to use your name in the media. It was considered, infra dignitatis, beneath one's dignity, right? So when you got a permanent gig, doctors used to remember go on as Dr. Paul and Dr. Peter and things like that. That it was considered.
We're not allowed to show his face.
Yeah, that's right. So I had to pick a pseudonym, which I took from a famous snail in the bottle legal case called Donoghue and Stevenson,
which most is one of the first taught in legal school,
absolutely.
Law school, isn't it?
Yep.
Speaking of your partner, Burnzo. What's it like working with John Burns?
Well, I said to him one night, we're in Athens for the Olympics in 2004, and a program finished at 11:30 at night, something like that. And then we lived in this flat. We stayed in this flat in a suburb of Athens. I won't remember it. But anyway, we're having a beer. And I said, you're a very uncomplicated person. Jacks. You're the most uncomplicated person I've ever met. And he turned around and he said, that means I'm dumb. I said, no, that doesn't mean you're dumb. He's a very uncomplicated person. Very easy to get on with. An absolute delight.
And he was part
has
of the...
Has no interest in horse racing, by
the way. No, because every time you mention having a bet, he almost scoffs.
Yeah. He has zero interest.
Because he was Sir Lancelot, wasn't he?
He was. Yeah. I've been reading, and one of the things I love about horse racing is, I don't know whether you've read much Damon Runyon, the great short story
writer. I have read, yeah.
He had a character called Nicely Nicely Jones, who he described as a character who dearly loves to commit eating. Burnzo dearly loves to commit eating and drinking. and he started on our show as Sir Lunchalot, a person who said that any midday meal that went for under 4 hours could not be called lunch. It was merely taking on board sustenance. They'd had to get to the four-hour limit before it could properly be described as lunch.
Who's racing's best Sir Lunchalot?
Gee, who's... Do you know Jerry Walsh?
Oh.
I think Jerry probably would be the current title holder.
Yes, hollow legs. Speaking of racing, the best horse you've ever seen...
Trying to think. Well, you tend to remember the ones from when you were younger, and you had favourites. I loved a horse called Grand Sidium, which someone's going to ring up and correct me. I think won a Caulfield Guineas. It's a beautiful looking horse by Oncidium, I'm pretty sure. I loved Grand Sidium as a horse. More recently, I think of the. Of the three, and I love horse racing because the three greatest horses of the last 30 years are all women. Of Maccabi, Black Caviar, and
Winx.
And Winx. I have a real fondness for Winx, maybe because it's trained by Chris. When we're in Kentucky, a lot of racing people knew about Winx, and we're at the Derby, and they would and come with them when they found out it was Chris. They would talk to Chris, and I got my phone out, and I got YouTube, and was showing the Americans Winx winning the Cox Plate. And Chris led over and said, show him the rider. He loves, for some reason, it'll mean more to people.
Race.
Yeah, he thought her Winx, her win in the rider was especially special.
It's quite remarkable the time that we've been in, the last 15-odd years, to have those three horses.
Yeah, incredible. Incredibly dominant. Mm. There's one of the great trivia questions. Who was the last jockey to get beaten on Winx? On 3AW, we'd throw it open for two bottles of De Bortoli.
You've got me.
Joe Moreira.
Oh, Joe.
Yeah.
And you've got a candle for Joe, don't you?
We do. And, well, I haven't broken this news on 3AW. I'll break it on RSN. We've got him.
You've got him.
We've got him.
Joe Moreira's coming on That's Racing.
He is.
Brilliant.
In a few weeks' time. Oh. So, yeah.
Let me know when you've got him. I'll try and dovetail off him for here.
Well, I don't know whether you love the Shartin races on Sundays. I think it's absolutely brilliant racing.
It's difficult to get that on in my household.
Why's that?
Well.
Please.
You have a chat to Jackie for me.
Oh, Jackie. Well, it's the least she can do for getting the traveller banned.
Correct.
Right, is that allow her husband to watch Shartin races on Sunday afternoon. So they had the recent 8-week hiatus for Shartin. So they come back after 8 weeks. He rides the first five.
Five. Unbelievable. Is he the best jockey you think you've seen?
Yes, because he's the most unusual. His riding action is quite different. And his background from Brazil. But I was speaking to a Hong Kong trainer recently who said they think Zach Purton's a better rider.
Mm.
So I wouldn't know. You know, trainers would know. But there's just something about the Magic Man that I find just glorious.
Who do you think's the best trainer? I know you've got horses with Chris at the moment and he's a good friend of yours throughout your time in racing.
Well, there's like Hazy, Freedy.
Did you interview Bart very often?
Never did.
No,
never did. Bart, obviously. Rob Smurden's very, very good trainer. He trained Air Hostess. In fact, you've heard him. You've heard a lot of them. Air Hostess had her first start at Sandown, and I was driving out there. David Price bought her for us.
Yep.
And Pricey was
Jenny Hancock.
Jenny Chapman, and from Hong Kong. Pricey.
Jenny Chapman. Sorry.
And I rang up Pricey. I said, how's she going to go? And he said, oh, I'd be disappointed if she didn't run a place. And I thought, oh, well, that's good. So I then rang up Robert Smurden driving out to Sandown. As Punter to Punter used to have in that song, the races are at Sandown and you're joking if you think I'm going to go. It's 20 miles from Melbourne and the track's on the heavy side of slow. But I'm driving out there and I rang up Rob and I said, how's she going to go? And he said, she'll do what she'll do. So I've never heard that one before or since. She'll do what she'll do. So I got out
there. So did you back it?
No, I went up to the stall to say hello, to have a look at her, and there was about a 13-year-old girl, you know, standing there with a horse, and I said, hi, I'm one of the owners. How is she? And she goes, oh, they won't catch her today. I said, beg your pardon? She said, oh, they won't catch her today. Thank you very much, 8-1. Little the one. She won her first three in town.
It's a line out of Farlap, the movie.
Yeah, it was great. Oh, I can't remember what the initial question. Oh, trainers. Yeah, and Chris, I enjoy talking to Chris. Chris is, he's half a horse whisperer.
Mm.
You know, he's very in tune with the psyche of the horse.
And it's remarkable again that we've got these trainers, like Darren Weir, what he's doing at the moment is quite phenomenal. Your favourite punting story?
Gee, I'm trying to think.
Have you had a big win?
I was about to go to England, so I think it was 2005. I was going to go and watch the last test match at the Oval. All right? So I was leaving on the Tuesday, and on the Saturday, I had an all-up bet. I can't remember what the first leg of the all-up was, but in the second leg, I had a horse called Harry Allard's Lane. Harry Allard's Lane stormed down the outside at 125-1 and won. So that provided me with a fair coverage of my trip to England. So now, Harry Allard's, and I also backed, I think on Derby Day some years back, I backed a horse called To Be Fair, which came down from Sydney and paid, I think, $106.
Now, the old punting adage is that you halve your losses and your wins with your better half. What's your theory?
10% rule. 10% rule is pretty effective around these parts, because I'd have to be the unluckiest bloke in the world if Sarah was currently listening to RSN.
You've got four kids, two are grown up, almost young adults, and you've had two after the age of 50.
Yeah, I know.
You're a redoutes.
I am a redoutes. What I say is that I fully expected to have a two-year-old at this time of my life. I just thought it would be a racehorse. Yeah, 22, 18, 6, and 18 months.
What's that been like in later life?
It's great. I absolutely love it. And I loved having the first two as well. It's one of those stories. Oh, you know, people say, you're a better parent, you know, second time around. No, I was fine first time, and I'm enjoying second time as well. My six-year-old son asked me last night, he said, what's your favourite, having asked me on the weekend, what's my favourite letter, which I thought was one of the most interesting questions I've ever been asked, he asked me what my favourite animal was, and I said, a leopard. And he said, wouldn't it be a horse? You've got six of them. And I said, no, you're probably right.
Very smart, very smart. As an owner, what's the one race you'd love to win?
The Melbourne Cup.
Yep.
Sounds obvious, but it's just such a part of Australian folklore and history. It's obviously not the best race, but yeah, I think the Melbourne Cup.
Mm.
And there's one that we've got. You know, we've bought one that's going to
heading to
stay
the Melbourne Cup.
Oh no, well, who knows? But you know, we haven't bought a sprinter or a miler or something like that. We've bought a horse that, you know, might get a run. I always said that I would love to own a Melbourne Cup winner, and I had a horse first past the post in a 2-mile race on Cup Day.
The hurdle?
Horse I had called Vorjak led the field the first time round in the Cup hurdle, which I'm pretty sure was 2 miles. I did, and I've kept it. That would be the one, I think. Yeah.
You're a man who is at the pinnacle of media in Melbourne and Australia. How do you think racing is perceived at the moment?
I see it actually on the verge of a big comeback. Because there's a group of young people at 3AW, for example, who are extremely passionate about horse racing. More about the racing than the punting. I'm sure they have the occasional bet, but they are passionate about the horse as an athlete. So I see some green shoots there. And if we can get organised in Victoria, properly organised, and we make it entertaining, like punter to punter, yeah, I see a future.
You think that's what needs to occur with the media and the coverage as well, is that it needs to be... Punting's important and stats form's important, but there needs to be a bit more entertainment involved.
Yeah, entertainment and more about the horse's athlete.
Mm.
Yeah. Because I was talking to someone recently, speaking to Hughie Bowman, and they were talking about Winx, and Hugh Bowman said, it's all about her agility. And I thought, God, I thought it was about how fast she was. And, but he said, no, it's her how agile she is.
Mm.
So anyway, get those stories. Theory Bowman, of course, the only jockey in the world, presumably, who can play the bagpipes. So, which he can.
Can he? Mm. Professionally.
Yeah, he went to like Scots College in the bush somewhere.
Dunny do.
Learnt the pipes.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Roscoe, that hour has flown by. It has been such a pleasure to have you in here, just shooting the breeze about racing.
Jackie, let him watch the Chartier races.
Can you leave us with your spring carnival horse to follow?
Oh, gee.
This will go into the vault.
Oh, no, I've got one of my own.
Ooh.
Who do I think is a horse to follow? No, give me a prompt. I haven't looked at it closely enough. No, I've got nothing for you.
Well, you tipped two on the weekend.
Yeah, I did. Russian Revolution and Stampede. Let's go with Russian Revolution. I thought that was a nice win.
Done. Ross, it's been a pleasure. Look forward to seeing That's Racing throughout the Spring Carnival. And good luck to a love letter for those who want to get out to Flemington.
Google love letter to Racing Flemington.
Good on you. Thank you for taking the time to be our special guest on Racing's Open Mic.
No worries. It's been a pleasure.
Ross Stevenson, the 3AW legend. Tomorrow, a little later today, it's a big day. The weights are released for the Caulfield and Melbourne Cup. Tomorrow morning at 8:30, Greg Carpenter will join us live in the studio. After 9 o'clock, we will have the chairman of the VRC, Amanda Elliott, in the